guest is a hip-hop artist, a songwriter. He's from St. Petersburg, Florida. He just released his latest album, Oxtails. He's Shakur, and I want to welcome him to the library with Tim Einacullin. Thank you for joining me, man.
Yeah, no problem, Tim.
Thanks. So I was reading your bio, and I kind of, you know, one of the things that stick out, it's you make sure to tell people that you're profanity-free in terms of your lyrics. Why have you made that conscious effort to not curse in your rhymes?
It kind of really goes all the way back to as a kid when I decided that I wanted to be a rapper at like 11, 12 years old. When I talked to my dad about it, he was like all for it. He said, look, as long as you keep your music clean, don't degrade women, I'm all for it. And I just, you know, ever since a kid, I just kind of stuck to it. And he also used to tell me that, you know, like a man curses because he can't really find the words to express how he truly feels. So, you know, just being a, you know, a lover of words, I'd rather find a different way to articulate, you know, what it is that I'm trying to express than to do what everybody else is doing.
Did you find it tough to like write a rhyme and not curse, or has it?
Not really, because it's really not, because I don't curse in, you know, life period, really. So it's like, it's not really hard. I know a lot of people, when they hear it, they're like, man, how do you do that? But I'm like, if I don't normally curse, then it's like, it just translates into the music.
Right. So you're from Florida, but you said that in your bio, you said that Run DMC made an impression on you.
Yes. First,
how did a young man from Florida, like,
MTV, you know, I mean, you know, obviously hip hop originated in New York. So that's all we had to really look at. And it was just something about Run DMC, man. It was just that the chemistry was undeniable. And it spoke to me at a young age. I was like 8, 9 years old. And I just grew up in a house full of just music playing all the time. You know, my dad playing everything from, you know, Funkadelic, the Prince, the Stevie Wonder. And I loved that music, but it was something about Run DMC that just like really, I just loved their chemistry and how, even though it was three of them, it felt like one voice, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, what else?
So, they made me want to rhyme.
Well, for us that don't know, what was also the kind of, what was the Florida hip hop scene like when you were growing up? Were there also particular artists? Go ahead.
There was, mainly what we had was like Two Live Crew. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Luke Skywalker. And so it was a lot of dance bass music, you know, which was cool. But I gravitated more to the lyrical side of hip hop. You know what I mean? Because I just enjoyed that aspect of the art form. You know, it's cool to dance and cool to make people want to dance, but I gravitated more to the you know, to the Rakims and the Big Daddy Kanes and the KRS-Ones, because I enjoyed the exercise of putting rhymes together. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Was that, I don't want to say problematic, but did that make it tougher, I guess, for you to, and not being dismissive of Florida MCs, but does that make it tougher for you to rhyme and to be hip hop?
I think somewhat, yeah, because I think it was like, you know, expected to, you know, wherever you're from, to you to have that type of style. You know what I mean? So, coming from Florida, I think it was probably more expected for me to have more of that Florida sound, that booty shake sound, you know, that's what they call it, booty shake music, you know what I mean? And that's just, that's not, it didn't appeal to me like that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can respect it and not downplaying it or the down talking, but that just didn't really appeal to me. So, problematic. Yeah, I guess in a sense, but I think it also made me stand out a little bit too, which I'm all for that. I'm just not with, you know, being part of the status quo. I mean, I'm from that era where originality mattered, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Being unique. And so, so in that way, I kind of enjoyed being, you know, to the left of what everybody else was doing around me.
Tell me about TRC, the Real Clash. Who are they and what's their importance?
All right. TRC is the hip hop band that I am a part of. We've been together now for 6 years. We originated in class at school. There's a music program called MIRA, M-I-R-A, which stands for Music Industry Arts in St. Pete. And scared to give students like real world, basically, you know, application to the music side of things, to the music business, as far as it's like three different tracks you can choose between, like performance, production, and composition. So to make a long story short, the program is awesome, but my partner, Jay Act, who's pretty much the founding member of the crew, me and him helped find the group together. He thought it would be a good idea to introduce hip-hop into the curriculum. So he approached me and said, I think we should talk to the professors to see if there's some kind of way we can get, like, a hip-hop ensemble going, because they had other ensembles at the time, like rock, R&B, jazz. And the ensembles were basically where you would hook up with other students for a semester, and you would basically learn songs. But for the most part, the songs were cover songs. Mm. And the whole idea was to see how you collaborated with other artists, and you would learn the songs. And then at the end of the semester, you'd be graded by the way you performed them in front of a, you know, in front of a crowd or whatever. So when we approached the professors, we were like, we want to do a hip hop ensemble, but we would like to do original composition. And they were all for it. So my boy Jay handpicked everybody, because we kind of knew what other people can do from just working in like prior collaboration, prior projects for different classes. So he knew which guitarists to pick. He knew which drummers to pick. He knew which bass player, keyboard player, on and on. And so that's what started. So we really weren't thinking we were making a band. We were just trying to do something cool for a semester and trying to, you know, kind of put hip hop more in the forefront of this program. And what happened was, what we didn't predict was the chemistry that we would create in that few months. And so by the time we performed at the end of the semester, it was so well polished that the professors encouraged us to actually become a full-fledged band and keep it going. And it was like, take it outside the walls of this school, because you guys got something special. And so that's what we thought it would be a great idea. So we've been doing that ever since. So that started back in 2012. And since then, we've gone on to win, like, awards for, you know, the best hip-hop group in the Bay Area here in Tampa Bay. We've opened at the Okeechobee Music Festival last year, playing alongside The Roots and Usher and Wiz Khalifa. And it's been awesome, man. So, yeah, that's my crew. Shout out to TRC.
So, do you have a favorite instrument that you like to spit over? I mean, is there like one instrument of, you know, if you were on an island and you had one instrument that you had to spit over, is there like one that you would?
It's gotta be drums, man. That's essential for hip hop, man. That boom bap. It's gotta be drums. Yeah.
Nice. Shakur, I want to turn to your album, Oxtails. The title track, Oxtail, features Big Rube. What's the importance of having him on this track?
Oh man, I've been a fan of his ever since the first Outkast album, Southern Playalistic. His voice, his words, it's some about when he speaks, it just commands your attention, you know what I mean? And every project that I've heard him on, you know, I just gravitate to that track. And so, again, being a lover of words, I wanted to have just, you know, an iconic voice on the album that would, I guess, kind of almost, I don't know, kind of validate everything that I was trying to say on this album as far as, you know, oxtails and just kind of taking it back to where lyrics mattered and just the thought you put into your you know what I mean? So I felt like Big Rube, he, you know, he exemplifies that. So I reached out to him, not really knowing what would happen if I could afford him, none of that stuff. I just said, you know, well, it doesn't hurt to try. So I reached out to him, and surprisingly, he called me back, and we just talked and chopped it up, and I told him the idea for the, you know, for the interlude I wanted him to be on, and then he started dropping some knowledge based on what I was saying, and it just was like, wow, this is really happening. And so I shot him the track. I produced that track, actually. Mm-hmm. And I produced that track the year I graduated from the program, which was like 2013. And I just sat on the beat for a while because I felt like it was something special about this beat. I was like, I don't even want to spit on it. I just felt like it was something so special about this beat, and I didn't know what what I was going to do with it, who it was going to be for or whatever. And after me and him talked, it was just like the light bulb went off. It was like, I got the perfect track for you. And I sent him the track, and the next day he had his part done. I was just like, wow. So that's like a big highlight of the album for me.
Right. I was curious, in terms of album track placement, you listen to Oxtails with Big Rube, and you kind of the track, and I always and I feel like he always does this a lot on a lot of the stuff that he's on, but it always to me feels like when he does something in a way where he makes it a kind of creating it as like an introductory track to the album. But in terms of album placement, I mean track placement for Oxtails, this is the fifth track on the album, and you start the uh-huh. the first track we hear is Two Commas. So kind of mm-hmm. In terms of placement, why Two Commas to start out the album, and why Oxtails with Big Rube to be the fifth track?
That's a great question, actually. I like intros, but I also, again, this kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about not doing the status quo. It's like, that's almost expected, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The intro type of deal. So, and I've done intros in the past on prior projects, but sometimes I'm like, let's just get straight to the music. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So that's why, the Oxtails interlude is with Big Rube is meant to play more like an interlude. It's like, okay, I've given you a taste of me. Now let me give you something that you don't see coming. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like, you know, wow, I didn't see that coming. And you know, you could probably say, well, you didn't see it coming either as an intro with Big Rube on it. But it was like, that's kind of the expected thing to have the intro on a project. So I just kind of like to switch it up a little bit.
Oh, nice.
That's one thing. That's one thing as an artist that I enjoy. As an artist and as a fan is, not being predictable. You know, that unpredictability is what keeps my ears glued to the speakers. Like, cause wow, I didn't see that coming. What's next? You know what I mean?
Right.
So I like to have that mystique.
The track Ox Acapella, why did you approach this track as an acapella, and how is writing an acapella kind of different when you're writing to a beat, or do you normally approach your music as an acapella?
No, I don't. It was kind of like a feel type thing. I was writing it, trying to remember. It's crazy because I wrote that track the same day I started writing that track, right? And my pastor at the time was ill. He was really ill. And I actually got the call later in that day that he had actually passed away the day that I was writing Oz Capella. And it was a blow, man. It was a real blow, but I can't believe that I actually finished writing it even after hearing that. And not only did I finish writing it, I went to the studio and laid it down the same day that my pastor, who also was my godfather, so he's been knowing me my whole entire life, I laid that track down that same day. It just felt like, again, I'm like, to me, the lyrics are what drives the music. Like, to me, that's like the most essential part. You know what I mean? So I wanted to have something where you just focus on just what was being said. So that track isn't meant to make you bob your head or nothing. It just was like, I wanted to make a quick little 2-minute statement of just overcoming your fears. For me specifically, it was about, I guess, like the fear of not accomplishing the goal that I've set forth with this music, which is to one day be able to do this full time, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To get paid primarily off my music and not have to work 2 jobs like I'm doing right now. And, you know, I've been doing this music for so long, but still haven't seen to where it could take me, you know, as far as I want to go just off of that alone. So I was just in a place where I just wanted to say, you know what, this, you got to tell that fear goodbye, you know what I'm saying? Because it'll cripple you, you know what I mean? And to lose someone as significant as my godfather on that day, it was just like, that was a challenge. That was a test to me, I felt like. And I was like, no, I have to complete it and I have to lay it down today. You know what I mean? So that was that's a very special track on the album, Oz Capella.
I want to turn to another track on the album, Black Don't Crack. Where were you when you the idea for this track hit you, and kind of what's the purpose of the track?
The purpose of that track is just with Black Don't Crack, it was just like I felt like that record was so necessary with the climate that we're in right now and how you know, so much police brutality that's being recorded and documented and so much negative imagery that we see on the news of the black man. And I just wanted to put out a reminder that, hey, man, we are a peculiar people. We are a chosen people. We are, you know, we got it going on. And don't let the news or the media or what you see taint your vision of who we are. We're not animals. We're not thugs. You know, we're righteous people. And, you know, there's a saying that black don't crack because black people, you know, seem to age well. So I wanted it to have that aspect, but I wanted to go deeper than that and mean that we don't crack, we don't fold under pressure. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like a little twofold meaning to that.
Another track on the album, Pillow. It kind of takes us into relationships and the importance of not just a physical relationship, but the importance of treating the mental as well of the relationship. Mm-hmm. Again, why this track at this particular time?
I'm a fan of that 90s era R&B / hip hop collaborations, and you know, the two people that I put on the track with me, Jay Act, my partner from TRC, and Joshua Cruz. I just felt like we would make we'd make a dope collaboration together. You know, Joshua Cruz is killing it here in Tampa on the R&B pop tip, and you know, me and Jay, we just got the chemistry from flowing together for 6 years. So I just kind of wanted to have a feel good track on there that just highlighted, you know, love, and you know, in a tasteful way where you know, you got so much that's just, you got so much music out now. That's just so I don't know. It's just it's not leaving anything to the imagination when it comes to love and when it comes to sex and things of that nature. So I kind of wanted to take it back to just having that that sense of I don't know, that just that just a little bit of, I don't even know how to put it, just love, man, but yeah. But not so much blatant in your face you know, I want to do this to you, I want to do that to you, but I want to make it metaphorical. I want to really make love to your mind more than anything. You know?
Yeah, no, I hear that. I got you. And I think you touched on it a little bit, but the last track on the album is His Side. Obviously a really personal track.
Yes.
Who is this about, and what was the importance of this person to you, and kind of why leave it as the final track of the album?
Well, His Side, you know, that's the song that you never want to write. You know, it's a tribute to my pastor again, who has been knowing me all, you know, 42 years of my life. He was my dad's best friend. They were friends since, you know, middle school. He just was a very, very significant part of my life. First of all, as my godfather, and then in the second half of my life as my pastor. And he was also the first person to donate funds to Oxtails even being completed. You know, I had sent out an email to like a few friends and family just trying to, you know, do a little fundraising to actually get the album done and get it completed. And he gave me above and beyond what I was asking for. And he was excited. He was a big supporter of my music. You know, let me perform in church all the time. Just always just an above and beyond type of guy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so the album was pretty much complete as far as the songs that I wanted to have on it. And then he unexpectedly passed like a month after, you know, a month after me telling him about the album. And I just, like the next day after he passed, I wrote that song. I produced that track as well. And like I said, it's the track you don't want to write, but I felt like I had to honor him, and I had to pay tribute to him and just let the world know how special of a guy he was.
You told Chuck D in the email that you thought this album is some of my best work. How do you judge your own work, and why do you feel, you know, after all your music, why do you feel that this one is some of, you know, the best stuff you've done?
I think for the most part, all my work prior to this, which, you know, it was most of the work prior to this was before I went back to school for music. I got a degree in music composition. So with this album, I had the benefit of knowing a little bit more exactly how to compose, you know what I mean? So I basically had a better GPS system, so to speak, on how to navigate going about putting a song together. So, like, you know, when to put a break in the beat, when to add a scratch, when to, you know, do this and do that. And so I felt like I had better tools going in on this album, and it allowed me to, like, really just really compose a great album, you know what I mean? Just from start to finish. And so, you know, I don't really believe, and I think I heard Royce da 5'9" say this about he doesn't have a prime, and I agree with that. You should always feel like you can get better. You should always improve, or else why else do it? Why do it? You know, if you aspire to the belief that, you know, my best days are behind me, you know what I mean?
Right.
So I feel like I can always improve. I can always try to find words to rhyme that nobody would have saw coming and things of that nature. And yes, I just, you know, I feel really confident about this particular project as far as from, you know, the right beats being with the right words and hooks and things of that nature. Because sometimes you can have a dope rhyme, but you spit it over the wrong beat. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So everything just kind of complementing each other. I felt like I had better tools to use this time around, and that's why I feel like this is my best work.
Is there a kind of a track that you're from the album that either kind of represents the album or maybe the track that you're kind of you've been rocking or listening to for the last week?
You know, I think Crock-Pot best defined. If the album was a big paragraph, then I feel like Crock-Pot is the main idea. You know what I mean? Take your time with it. Put it in the slow cooker because, you know, it's more gooder when you put it in the slow cooker. You know what I mean? So you take your time with it, and people will appreciate it from a fan perspective. It's like, wow, this person really put together a nice project. It doesn't sound rushed. It sounds like they took their time and really put an effort into what they did. So I think that's what Crock-Pot, for me, that's what Crock-Pot is all about.
Shad Core, his new album is Oxtails. You can follow him on Twitter at Shad Core, Shadcore. Hey man, thanks so much for joining me in the library with Tim Indigo.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you, Tim.